Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our weekly EAN podcast. My name is Barbara Tettenborn. I'm the editor-in-chief of e-learning of the European Academy of Neurology. And on my side for today's podcast is Dr. Miguel Silva Miranda. He is a fourth-year neurology resident working at Hospital de Cascais on the outskirts of Lisbon, Portugal. He has received his medical training at the Faculty of Medicine of Lisbon, where he had the opportunity to work as an undergraduate researcher at the Medical Education Department. And at the moment, he is the RRFS representative in the EAN Program Committee and belongs to the Sustainability Task Force. So he is a perfect guest for today's talk, because our topic today is neurology and climate change. So very welcome, Miguel.
Oh, thank you very much for the invitation, Professor Barra, and for this lovely introduction, by the way.
Yeah, so I think we go right into the topic. We have about 20, 25 minutes to talk about something very interesting. I think our listeners will be delighted that they hear something which is not only about scientific work on neurology itself, but one could really wonder what climate change and neurology have to do with each other. So maybe you can introduce us into the topic a little bit by talking about how neurology and climate change are connected.
When we talk about climate change and its impact over human health, we immediately think of cardiorespiratory diseases, because we know that connection is rather well established. However, when we try to understand the relationship between climate change and neurological diseases, that connection, it is not as clear. Luckily, science keeps evolving every day, and at the moment, we have a growing body of evidence connecting the climate change and global warming to several neurological diseases. There is a very interesting scoping review published in Neurology last year. And in that scoping review, the authors were able to include more than 300 papers connecting global warming with neurological diseases. So, for instance, just to have a broad idea of what is known until now, the authors were able to include 38 studies on the impact of extreme weather events and temperature fluctuations on neurological diseases. They were also able to find 37 studies on emerging neuroinfectious diseases. And last but not least, they found 289 studies on the relationship between air pollutants and neurological diseases. So it does seem that climate change has several implications for neurological diseases. And as climate change gets worse, our urgency to understand its impact over neurological health grows bigger and bigger. And as neurologists, we definitely should get ahead on this topic, because we will need to mitigate the effect of climate change over patients' morbidity, mortality, and of course, we will need to mitigate the effect of climate change over burden on our healthcare systems.
It's very interesting. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the literature. And you mentioned that there are so many publications already about climate change and neurological diseases. So maybe you can bring it a little bit more even to the point, how does the global warming impact the human health, and how does it impact neurological diseases in particular?
Sure, it will be a pleasure. So, returning to that scoping review that was published in Neurology that I just talked about, I believe the authors were able to draw a very good picture of what is known until now. So, the authors divide the papers they found in these three sectors, as I said, so extreme weather events and higher temperatures, neuroinfectious diseases, and then they talk about airborne pollutants and its correlation to neurological diseases. So, they from the body of evidence they collected, they tells us that regarding higher temperatures and extreme weather events, we believe that these events are connected to an increment of 4% of the stroke risk. We don't know exactly the pathophysiology behind this increment in stroke risk, but we believe that 4% of stroke risk will be only attributable to temperature and its variability alone. And then if we want to look into other neurological diseases, the paper also mentions some studies that show a correlation between higher temperatures and lower barometric pressures with more frequent episodes of any type of headache, especially non-migraine headache. And then if we are to talk about, for instance, let's say, multiple sclerosis, there's at least one study that estimates a 9% increment in clinical presentations of multiple sclerosis per one degree Celsius increment in temperature range. So there seems to be a clear connection between global warming and more an exacerbation of multiple sclerosis and more clinical presentations of multiple sclerosis. And then if we go into your particular area of interest, if we talk about epilepsy, there are at least 3 studies that connect global warming and especially extreme weather events with seizure frequency. So the three studies that I've just mentioned basically tells us that unstable weather and lower temperatures, it's not the higher temperatures, it's the lower temperatures and the relative humidity. So unstable weather seems to be connected to a higher seizure frequency. So this seems to appear more frequently during autumn, during winter, during spring, whereas during the summer, patients with exposure to higher temperatures will not face as many seizures. And this correlation between epilepsy and extreme weather events has already been recognized by important scientific stakeholders like the International League Against Epilepsy, that has just recently published a position statement on the journal Seizure. I believe it was last month, and it was written by their Climate Change Commission. So they do recognize that climate change has a clear impact in epilepsy, and that's very important. But then if we keep on looking for evidence connecting neurological health and global warming, if we decide to talk about other areas of neurology, let's say sleep medicine, despite not having a large-scale studies with objective measures of sleep, we estimate that global warming is associated with diminishing total sleep times and is also associated with the bigger fragmentation of sleep. So, and we know that sleeping less and having a fragmented sleep will eventually have other consequences for neurological and non-neurological health altogether. And these are just the direct consequences of global warming over neurological diseases. But then the authors in that scoping review I just talked about also mentioned the problem of neuroinfectious diseases. So as the weather gets warmer, we will probably face new outbreaks, emerging neuroinfectious diseases. So in the future, we might see more patients with West Nile encephalitis. We might see more patients with Japanese encephalitis. We will eventually see more patients with meningococcal meningitis. And in Europe, especially, we will probably face a bigger problem with the tick-borne encephalitis, because we know that as the weather gets warmer, the transmission periods for the tick-borne disease will become larger. And we also know, at least according to what epidemiologists believe, it is also very likely that in Europe we will have new epidemiological foci for tick-borne disease, especially in Scandinavia. So we should definitely monitor these outbreaks in order to prepare our public health policies. Maybe in the future we'll need to have a wider vaccination strategy regarding tick-borne disease. Who knows? So we should definitely be prepared to act upon the consequences of climate change over neurological health. And last but not least, and this part is very important, when we talk about global warming, we talk about air pollution. We know that air pollution is one of the biggest causes of global warming, and we have a large body of evidence connecting exposure to airborne pollutants and its causality regarding neurological diseases. For instance, we know that exposition to airborne pollutants increases the risk and severity of ischemic stroke. We also know, we have some studies saying that short-term exposure to airborne pollutants are connected to exacerbation of multiple sclerosis activity. And then we know that we have some specific airborne pollutants that have broad consequences over the central nervous system. They have different mechanisms, but they appear to have some sort of an accelerated aging mechanism, which might be connected to the progression and to the development of neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease and like amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. For instance, if we talk about dementia, which is an area I'm particularly fond of, if we talk about dementia, we know that patients harboring the APOE4 allele have a greater risk of cognitive decline if they are exposed to airborne pollutants in the decades previous to the development of dementia. We also have some evidence from advanced imaging studies with amyloid PET scans that tell us that the amyloid burden on the PET scan is likely to be more expressive if the patient has been exposed to particulate matter 15 years before doing the scan. So this seems quite impressive, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, that really sounds like overwhelming evidence that the climate change and the warmth we just have at the moment is of no good for any neurological disease, and actually not for any of our health questions altogether. So it's not only neurology, but it's our health in general, and the brain health probably just especially in danger, as you just mentioned. I'm really surprised how much evidence there is. So how does sustainability stand in correlation with the brain health?
Well, that question is always a bit hard to answer, especially because I think the concept of brain health is very abstract. There are several definitions for brain health that are all valid. But before answering this question, I think we need to have a clear definition of what we call brain health. At least to me, the simplest definition I found for brain health is that brain health represents the complete functioning of the brain across the life course of an individual to support its physical, mental, social, and spiritual well-being and quality of life. To me, this is the simplest definition I can find regarding brain health.
That's also the brain health strategy definition. You have the perfect definition.
I chose the right one. Yeah. Great.
Yes.
We have been talking about brain health for quite a long time, but at the moment, the brain health subject is becoming more and more discussed because it's basically in every agenda of every neurological society, especially since May 2022, when the World Health Organization introduced a new intersectoral global action plan on epilepsy and other neurological diseases with a specific purpose of developing a plan to tackle the global burden of neurological diseases. So everybody's talking about brain health. We have a lot of new papers written in the literature regarding brain health. And I have just recently read one very interesting paper. It was published last month in Nature Reviews Neurology. It was published by an extensive group of authors, which included Professor Bassetti and also included Professor Boone. And in that paper, the authors were able to define four dimensions that they believe are very important to ensure brain health. So I would like to talk a bit about these four dimensions. The authors mentioned these four dimensions as what they have called the neurological quadrangle. When we talk about brain health, we must ensure four pillars. The number one is the surveillance and innovation, with regular monitoring of disease burden and risk factors for neurological diseases. Then we have the second pillar, which is the prevention and promotion, with integration of population-wide strategies to reduce the modifiable risk factors for neurological diseases. And then we have the third, which is the diagnostic and acute care of neurological diseases. And we have the fourth pillar, which is basically the rehabilitative and palliative care for chronic neurological diseases. Climate change has a clear impact on brain health because it works, as we've just seen, it works as a risk factor for many neurological diseases. So I would say climate change affects the first and second pillar right from the beginning. So if we are to prevent climate change, let's say by endorsing a more sustainable way of living, we are having a direct repercussion on brain health. Furthermore, when we talk about climate change, we must recognize that climate change substantially disrupts human systems. And I'm not only talking about the direct repercussions over physical health. When we talk about climate change, we must recognize that it is a motor behind migration flows. It affects human physical activity. It affects our individual productivity. It affects the global economy. So when we talk about climate change, we are talking not just about the physical aspects or the physical impact of climate change, but we are also talking about an impact that can ultimately be social as well. So let's say if we are to advocate for environmental sustainability, that will also mean providing safe and secure homes. That will also mean protecting humans from stress, promoting spiritual and holistic health. And all these dimensions can be considered to be a part of the concept of brain health, I guess. So I would say there is an interdependent and bidirectional relationship between brain health and sustainability, because if we want to advocate for sustainability, we need to have brain health. But in order to still have brain health in the future, we will have to endorse sustainability in the short and medium term.
So that's obviously also a very political point you just raised. And I know that the European Academy of Neurology is very much into this topic of the brain health strategy, of brain health altogether. And it's also committed to act more sustainable now and, of course, in the future. So could you maybe tell us a little bit what the EAN is actually doing to implement more sustainable actions?
Sure. So for the European Academy of Neurology, sustainability represents a commitment with future generations and for future generations. The EAN knows that learning how to conserve resources and improve quality of life is fundamental in order to ensure the future of our sons and our daughters. So basically, sustainable approaches to EAN core business are essential so that EAN can have a positive impact in the environment, society, and economy. When it comes to sustainability, the European Academy of Neurology is still building its road. At the moment, they have already defined a sustainability strategy. They have based their sustainability strategy on the United Nations Sustainable Developmental Goals Plan. They have read the plan, they have structured realistic goals from that plan, and they have adapted those goals to the European Academy of Neurology's reality. So along the way, the European Academy of Neurology wants to certify its projects as eco-friendly, and to do so, they are basically trying to follow European and Austrian eco guidelines, ecological guidelines. They are trying to do so. So maybe in the near future, we will be able to have a completely carbon neutral European Congress. At least that's what I'm hoping for. And furthermore, EIN is also devoted to foster education on sustainability in neurology. And I think this is really, really important because we know that the path to sustainability is still rather new. We are all learning along the way, and providing information, providing education is the key to ensure that we as neurologists will be able in the future to advocate for sustainability. So in order to promote education on sustainability, EIN has created the Sustainability Task Force, and it's also running a lot of initiatives based on promotion of sustainability, either during our European Congress, either during other EAN initiatives like this EAN cast, I would say.
Yeah, thank you very much for updating us on all these very important actions. And I think if we all work together, we will be able to do a lot for the future of all our health, of our brain health in particular, of society. And we will work together at the EAN to realize all your projects. And I'm very happy that the young ones are so much into the subject and you're one of the group of the Sustainability Task Force. So thank you very much. I learned a lot today. I hope our listeners also found it interesting. And we will have, I think, a follow-up in a couple of months' time on this topic because there's so much happening at the moment and so much literature, as you mentioned in the beginning, that I'm sure we will have this topic again. And I would be very happy to have you again as a guest for another podcast in a couple of months' time. So thank you very much, Miguel, for this interesting talk today. And I'm hoping that we meet again for another podcast very soon because there's so much coming up in the next couple of months that I'm sure we will have another podcast on this topic in the end of the year. So thank you once again.
Oh, thank you, Professor Barra. Once again, thank you for the invitation, and I hope to see you in Helsinki next year.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.